Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. Today, we're bringing you a special roundtable exploring a recently launched new UBS strategic client segment in the US. It's called Rising Gen. This next generation of investors under 40 years of age have time on their side, whether that's time to plan, to recover from market fluctuations, or just to prioritise what truly matters. Even with the unprecedented impact of COVID-19, this rising generation is resilient, ready and resourceful. Why so? And what are the broader trends in terms of wealth and investment that make this millennial demographic so fascinating and so important? Well, with us today to explore those questions are two millennials themselves. First, the head of the Rising Gen segment within UBS, and one of her colleagues, a financial advisor, who'll both share insights into communicating with this generation and understanding the dynamics of this critically important client group. So, let's meet them. Giselle Rivera is head of the Rising Gen client segment, and Armine Babayan is that financial advisor, serving these clients across technology, entertainment and the startup world from her base on the West Coast in Los Angeles. Giselle, Armine, welcome both to the programme. Giselle, let me come to you first of all. A bit of an origin story, if you like, about this segment. Can you just give us some of the backdrop? Tell us why UBS launched the segment and how it's just such an important part of this broader communication, I guess, between all of UBS and its millennial customers in particular.
Yes, definitely. So we launched a segment because UBS is committed to helping this rising generation, which roughly includes those in between 20s and 40s, to achieve their financial goals. And our segment focuses on understanding and addressing the specific challenges and needs that this generation faces. And we know our industry has not typically spoken the language of the rising gen, and we need to do a better job of meeting them where they are. So one important aspect of that is leading with understanding and not assuming what this younger generation needs, which is one of the reasons what we make sure we do is that we're speaking directly to younger investors regularly through interviews, surveys, on a continuous basis. And I know we'll touch on the research later on, but I do want to mention that I am leading the segment as a millennial myself. And even in my own personal experience, a lot of people have told me, oh, in your 20s and 30s, you can kind of bump around and make mistakes. But not enough people were really speaking to the power and impact of using your younger years to get up to speed, to become financially literate and make decisions that put you in such a good position to be financially well. So what's meaningful to me about this launch is that for those who are in that growth phase, managing your money well and understanding how to do that from the start or so early on can reap such incredible rewards. So it's exciting to be harnessing the breadth of UBS's resources to empower people like me and my peers.
Well, absolutely. And you're right. We'll talk more about the research and we want to talk more about the opportunities as well that you've spoken about there, Giselle, in a moment. But Armine, perhaps I can come to you next. And can we talk, I guess, in this sort of broad brush way about the specific needs and preoccupations maybe of this millennial customer base? And I don't know, is it most helpful to look at how those interests stand apart from other demographies, other generations, if you like, or actually is it some of the overlay where it's most interesting?
That's a great question. And, you know, typically when I start working with the next gen client, there's three stages. And number one is the basics. It's the education. And it's through this education basics of the principles that leads us to the step two, the actual investing part, developing the philosophy around investing. And then as soon as we have that down, it unlocks all these tools once you're an investor, something I call smart debt. And so it starts with the basics. It's kind of like the pre-investing stage in a way, because for next gen, the simple things now set you in the future for the foundation for a successful investment portfolio, right? Our currency, as a millennial myself, is time. And time when you're an investor gives you the greatest edge for your compounding and your performance. So, you know, do it right, do it early, correctly, because it's not really if you need an FA, it really becomes when you're going to need a financial advisor. And so if you've been taking care of basics, it's pretty obvious you're going to need an FA really quick.
Well, let's talk about some of the tools. And Giselle, you mentioned this in your opening remarks about research. And obviously, I talked to all sorts of different colleagues throughout all the different divisions of UBS. And it's such a leader in terms of the quality, the depth and breadth of research that's conducted on an ongoing basis. But let's put that in the context, of course, of a pretty extraordinary last 12 months. During the pandemic, what exactly does the research reveal? Because I know there's some pretty interesting stuff in terms of how this millennial group's attitudes towards wealth, towards investing broadly, has actually shifted or evolved during what has been an unprecedented year.
Oh, sure, completely. And what we found was that in the midst of being hard hit by economic challenges, including COVID, this rising generation, this under 40 segment, felt that they did have it hard. Over half of them felt they had it harder than other generations, and they were facing greater job loss and expected job loss than the older generations we surveyed. But even being hard hit, they were still optimistic. So 81% of investors under 40 were very confident about achieving their financial goals, 81%, even facing all these difficult circumstances. But what we also saw was that, again, even facing these difficult circumstances, they held fast to their values. So they had such a strong desire to make a difference. 71% of investors under 40 said that was important to them to make a difference, which was double baby boomers. So pretty impactful difference there. They also showed that they were more interested in sustainable investing and giving to causes and financially supporting their families. So it kind of reveals this storyline of wanting to elevate their communities and the causes and people that they care about, as well as themselves. And the last thing I would mention from the research is that over half of these investors under 40 said that they were more likely to consider working with a professional advisor now than before the market volatility that erupted over the past year. So it shows that they're really considering and seeking out this advanced professional advice and understanding the level of personalization and impact that can come with that.
Let's talk a bit about, it's funny, on this program, we often look at the longer term investment theme, some of these big secular trends which shape the landscape, inform good decision making. And there are some of those which are so relevant here, obviously demographic shifts. And I think very importantly, this it's an unprecedented generational, intergenerational transfer of wealth, isn't there, from the sort of boomers to the millennials. Can you also add in some context for us, Giselle, if I maybe start with you, about how those longer term investment themes mesh together then with a very fluid and volatile situation like we've seen in the last 12 months? Because I guess you have to take a sort of a holistic approach to looking at all of this.
Definitely. And so absolutely, we can start with the generational wealth transfer. So $22 trillion is expected to be inherited by millennials in just the next few decades as part of that greatest intergenerational wealth transfer in history. And millennials at the same time are also rising their careers. There's some nearing peak earnings and overwhelmingly in that growth phase. So education is definitely key throughout, but also prior to those windfalls of money in particular, so that the right decisions are made when they do see that. But also because of that wealth transfer from one generation to the next, one really important thing is to have conversations and set expectations between generations. And I know one quote that we love over here at UBS is from George Bernard Shaw: the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion it's taken place. And so that's definitely something that needs to be addressed when you're talking about wealth transfer. But across the landscape, I would say there's a few other things that are quite interesting. So for example, when you look at the differences in life stages and how those kind of play out for those in their 20s and 30s now versus those who are maybe our parents and grandparents facing those decisions earlier, a few decades prior, there's a little bit of a difference between that. So for example, overall, this millennial generation is more formally educated than older generations. So there's a definite conversation around debt, but that educational piece also relates to how many millennials want to be very involved and fully understand the decisions that are recommended by someone like a financial advisor. They want to feel like they're in their driver's seat with the voice of kind of Google Maps leading them. So wanting a coach, not necessarily the driver, and to understand why certain options are better than others. And arguably related to the educational piece and the debt component, many millennials have pushed milestones like getting married and starting a family a little bit later down the line. So that means that they might have a simpler financial picture for longer in their lives. But of course, it's easy to talk about all these generalizations, but understanding how large this group, this rising generation group is, we need to recognize it's not homogenous. So the personalization is key. And exactly what Armine was mentioning is spot on. That personalization is absolutely key.
Well, at the risk of just perpetuating another sort of assumption or generalization, which you just cautioned against, there is something that I think you both alluded to separately, actually, this idea of optimism. And obviously, that's arguably never been more important than in the last 12 months when there have been so many new challenges. But the rising gen does seem particularly optimistic, maybe in spite of those factors. And I mean, at the risk of sort of boiling down something that's very complex into something very simple or simplistic, what are the reasons behind that as you see it? And how does that shape, does it directly shape investment decision making?
Investment decision making is really unique to each individual scenario, right? I'll meet someone and they come to me and they say, I want to buy a house in 2 years. I also still want to invest. Also, hey, I have some student loans. What do I do? Oh, and I need a car, right? Now, the S&P isn't trying to buy a car. The S&P isn't trying to buy a house. So just by using what the market's doing as a key guide to how a portfolio should be run can be tricky when you have all these individual needs. And so some utilization tips is really getting that budget down, really saying it's the basics. What money's coming in? What money's going out? How much do I have left to invest and grow for the long term, while also making sure my short-term cash flow needs are met? And adopting this philosophy of, you know, I've got some student loans. How much can I pay off to that and also still invest? Right. And that brings up opportunity costs, which is really in the education phase of all this. It's if my student loans are charging me an interest rate of XYZ and the average return on the market is XYZ, where should I be putting my money to still grow it while paying off my student loans? Even something like the buying the car example, right? If I'm going to put $5K down on a car, I better go take $5K and put it in the market, right? Because one thing is going to depreciate, one thing's going to appreciate. If your monthly car payment's $700, oh, you better go put $700 in the market every month. And if you can't do both, you can't afford that car yet, right? It doesn't mean don't have a car. It doesn't mean don't have a roof over your head. It's about weighing the opportunity cost of every single financial decision so that you're really optimizing your dollars now at the earliest phase of your life so that you can take part of the beauty that is compounding returns over many, many years of being an investor.
And I wanted to ask you both a little bit about your sort of personal investment. As you said, you're both in this demographic as well as kind of serving it in the roles that you do. But if we sort of wind the clock back a little, and I mean, I wanted to ask you, am I right in saying that I don't know if you work with your mother, and I wonder about the grounding maybe that she helped you to get in, having such an extraordinary command over this, you know, early in life. Was that one of the reasons why you became so passionate about the area and about, you know, pushing the boundaries and advising people to make better decisions earlier?
I wish you could see me because I have just the biggest smile on my face right now. I am so glad that you asked me about my mom. So Ida Babayan, she's my mother. I knew I wanted to be a financial advisor at 5 years old. And anyone in my life who has known me throughout doing like theater and dance and anything, they've said, oh, but she's going to be a financial advisor. Everyone knows I wanted to be a financial advisor. And a huge part of that was just going into the office with my mom, sitting on her lap, seeing the numbers go green and red, and hearing her on the phone, talking to clients, making decisions together. Hearing the empathy in her voice, if a client unfortunately had a passing in their family, you are that person for them. You are that person. And because I got such a hands-on experience for actually my entire life, I knew that my love of the markets and my love of taking care of people, knowing that being a financial advisor would be the perfect combination of both. And, you know, if I can't personally change the world, at least I know I'm being supportive to the people who are. And I get to do that with the clients I choose to work with. And I'm so proud that I get to do that. So thank you so much for asking me about my mom.
Well, no, thanks for talking. Yeah. That's good.
We work together.
That's great. Yeah, it's such a nice, I can't believe at 5 years old, I've got a 5 year old. I'm not marking him down as a potential financial advisor, bank robber maybe. And Giselle, what about yourself? I wonder, was it the same? Did you have a kind of a precocious grasp of things? I don't know, for one reason or another, or did you just find yourself kind of drawn into this idea of, I guess, a little like Amine talks about there, being able to really kind of shape some really significant and important things for people in a very, very kind of hands-on and personal way.
So I have to say, I love Armine's backstory. It's inspiring and makes me proud to work at a firm with advisors like her who care so much about the people that they work with. But at 5 and at 15, at 20 even, I did not even know what a financial advisor was, to be quite honest. I was in college and I didn't actually expect to go into financial services. I actually found it quite intimidating. I was a strong enough student, but again, something about it just intimidated me. I didn't think I spoke the language, had the acumen, and I didn't know finance was for me. But by being at this firm, by sitting in a seat, I learned that we need finance to be for all of us, and we owe it to ourselves to claim our spot here and to understand the simplest of things to the most complex of things that kind of impact our financial lives, because that's a really powerful thing that we all deserve to have that guidance on. So definitely a different story, but also equally as passionate about the impact that we're able to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really comes through from both of your remarks. Just perhaps a final thought then. If we have listeners to this program who say, look, exactly that, I recognize that passion and I want to push further in that direction. I want to get involved. I want to make better decisions. What's the first thing to do, I guess, other than picking up the phone to you guys, Giselle? What would you encourage people to do if they want to be proactive about this?
Sure. So one of the first things you can do is get up to speed, challenge yourself to become a little bit more financially literate. And so you can find a bunch of educational resources that are digital, interactive on ubs.com/rising. And you can explore some of those topics. I know for myself, even before I go see a doctor, I like to open my laptop and Google around to just feel a little bit more comfortable in that conversation. So if that's you, feel free to just get a head start by exploring some of the resources and tools that we have on there, because they're built for you as a way to get started.
And that's Giselle Rivera bringing us to the end of this edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. You can listen again and find out more, as always, at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.